Hello and welcome to another episode of the KLC podcast. I am Tyshawn Gardner, Associate Professor of Preaching and Assistant Director of the Kyle Lake Center for Effective Preaching at Baylor University's Truett Seminary. If you're watching via YouTube, please share this podcast. I'm especially excited today to have our colleague, Dr. Jenny Matheny, with us. We are so blessed to have you, and we're grateful for your work in the Hebrew Scriptures. Welcome to KLC Podcast.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
So let's get right into it. Yes. Tell us about yourself.
Yes.
Where you're from, what you do, why you do what you do.
Yes. Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. It's a fun question to like dive into that. So I'm from Napa, California. So grew up there in the Bay Area. I consider myself an accidental academic. This was not something I had planned on going into, but the Lord sort of opened it up later in life after years of ministry with my husband. My family has been involved in ministry for like almost 30 years now. Church planting, youth ministry, church revitalization, all sorts of things, and in lots of different denominational contexts. One of the things I thought I'd share since we're kind of talking about preaching today mm-hmm. is in my undergrad, I had to work through women being able to lead, teach, preach. That was not something affirmed in my undergrad setting. And I remember being chosen as a senior speaker.
Okay.
And I was in chapel.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to preach because I thought I'd be hilarious. And everybody laughed like, oh, women don't preach, you know.
Yeah.
And I just thought I could just see God saying, oh, just wait. And then not till after my master's did I actually preach my first sermon. And wow. So it was quite a journey for me. But anyways, it's been something I did not set out to do, but God has provided opportunity and it has been a joy to kind of lean into this along with doing ministry.
Yeah, so just last week, you were on a panel with Beth Allison Barr, and you were actually talking about preachers' wives, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So your husband is a minister?
Yes, he is.
Tell us about how that interaction is with you being a biblical scholar. Mm-hmm. He is a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
Does he lean on you for advice, or how do you all help one another?
Oh, yeah, we help one another in so many ways. It's kind of a gift that we both, you know, love the scriptures. We have, you know, can ask each other questions. I can borrow a lot of stories from him
okay.
and vice versa. And so it ends up being a really wonderful mutual exchange.
Uh-huh.
I think both being passionate and we're very different personalities. And so
right. We've
definitely had to navigate that well and learn to voice that well. But it's been really fun to like, I'll share things I know if he has a question to give him some insight and kind of vice versa. And so, and he's really big into also spiritual formation. And so we also tease each other a lot, you know, our different disciplines and stuff. So that has been a gift for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So on that note, you are teaching a class, Maymester, and you are, it's a spiritual formation class.
It's actually the Megalote.
Okay.
So the five festal scrolls.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, so that's going to be, I'm very excited to kind of dive into those. Yeah.
Okay. What could a preacher benefit from that class?
Oh, I see this class as being deeply formative for preaching, teaching, all of the things, because within these five books, you have very different voices.
Yeah.
And they're kind of together as liturgy, and I think of them as these different personalities around the table. Songs, Lamentations, Esther, Ruth, right? Ecclesiastes, and how we need different voices to speak into our time and place.
Right.
And Ecclesiastes especially, it is... It's really a great text for modern, I think, just ways of what is life about,
right?
And not being afraid to go there and ask those questions, right? And Lamentations as well. I know some of the work I do in trauma, it's really creating space for difficult emotions and for loss.
Yeah.
One of the areas I've been investigating with my research and some publishing with a good friend, Dr. Amy Hale, who's a psychologist at Boston Children's Hospital, and she will be here next week to join my class for part of that, is acceptance and commitment therapy. We've looked at it through that lens of really leaning into difficult emotions mm-hmm. because it really signals to our core values.
Okay.
And so often in the church, I think we're afraid to let ourselves be sad mm-hmm. or realize this is part of our story.
Right.
That not that we won't ever get through it, mm-hmm. but that it could be something we carry.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Right.
And I think that's one thing I would love for preachers and teachers to lean into is mm-hmm. that we don't get over certain things in our life.
Wow.
They are a part of us, right? They might be a scar that, you mm-hmm. know, is less visible.
Right.
But to also know that, to acknowledge that difficult thing or whatever we're going through. But also with an act, they use a lot of metaphors. And the Bible uses lots of metaphors. There's a lot of cool connections. But just that it doesn't have to be the thing that drives my life.
Okay.
Right? It yeah. is a part, but that voice or that difficult parent or, you know, some of those things, right, it'll just kind of rear its head. But to acknowledge it, yes, that's there. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was hard and painful.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let that determine right. where I want to go or do or, you know, to pursue, you know, Christ and all right. the things. So.
That's so powerful, mm-hmm. and we'll have to come back for another episode because I think it's vital and important that we, as preachers, talk about our own trauma mm-hmm. and how do we address and preach to people mm-hmm. in pain, right? Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of my colleague Matthew Kim's work, Preaching yes. to People in Pain. Mm-hmm. And something you said, I think, unless we know how to, maybe this is the wrong word, manage that mm. process, maybe a better word. Sometimes our own trauma comes out in our preaching.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So as you address mm. trauma, I think you, and we're going to get to your Downey lectures mm. Last year,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So if a preacher is preaching, from a trauma text, mm-hmm. Let's yes. say Tamar, right? Mm-hmm. What wisdom do you mm-hmm. would you share as I approach and prepare, mm-hmm. as I prepare for this message? Do you advise preachers to consult a psychologist mm-hmm. or a therapist to be informed? But are there things that I need to avoid if I'm preaching tough texts like that? And how could you advise preachers who are preaching from trauma texts to an audience who may be facing or have experienced some type of trauma?
Right, yeah, no, that's a big question and a really important one. I think trauma-informed preaching is mm-hmm. essential. Actually, a text that comes to mind, the Tamar narrative, I think of Genesis 38 a lot, but also David and Bathsheba.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember a pastor once calling me, was going to preach on that text, and he quickly said something like, they sinned, so the baby died, and then he went on and on. And I thought, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes.
I am so glad
yes.
you called me.
Uh-huh.
Because it's important for you to be aware that mm-hmm. lots of couples have okay. went, you know, been through miscarriages.
That's right.
And if you run through something like that, mm-hmm. often people in the audience, especially if they're not deeply like immersed in scripture and have had hermeneutics or exegesis, they will hear we've sinned mm-hmm. and that's why we've lost,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so to be aware, and they will not probably come up to you after the sermon
yeah.
and share that.
Right.
And so to be aware, this is an ancient text, they're processing it, right? Mm-hmm. Do the research,
mm-hmm.
But be very careful
right.
To kind of quickly go over a story like that because how it's perceived might be very different than what you're trying to
That's
communicate.
Right.
And I think if you preach on sensitive texts like that,
mm-hmm.
Definitely, I think, highlight the difficulty
mm-hmm.
And invite people, you know, if you're struggling or, you know, or things, you know, come talk to me later,
right?
Something, you know, often these texts can... certain things can emerge maybe that someone hasn't thought about for a really long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The scriptures do that. They kind of, you know, sometimes perk something and it's something, oh, you know, I haven't thought about that. And
right.
it's still really deeply painful.
Yes.
I need to process that. So it can be an opportunity for growth as well. But mm-hmm. I think, yeah, just whenever pastors, you know, and especially if you're not sure, run it by someone
yep.
you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And also to be aware of all the different situations people have been in the congregation, I think.
Yeah.
Just, you know, take that extra moment to like think, you know, how might
right.
someone hear this if they've experienced
yeah.
XYZ?
That is so important. Mm. That in itself is so important because I think sometimes in preaching such texts, especially in today's climate,
mm-hmm. oh, absolutely,
highly polarized, divisive, we can do lazy exegetical work, mm-hmm. for one, and then sometimes do more damage than good.
Yes.
So that's appreciated.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So your latest, so tell us, what area of the First Testament is your wheelhouse, is your playground,
yes.
we would like to say?
Oh, well, I the problem is I have too many playgrounds. I swing it from the monkey bars down the slide,
right.
All the things. The Book of Ruth is one.
Okay.
Violence in the Old Testament.
Okay.
I think one of my questions going into seminary and at the end of seminary was, wow, there's some really difficult texts. Why are these in our Holy Scriptures?
Yeah.
You know, and so I've done some work in that as well. But kind of coming out of that, I've really, like my new book coming out,
yeah.
Like really, because I've experienced the love of God so deeply.
Mm.
I think that is something that has become just solid,
yeah.
for me. So I'm not afraid in some ways to ask questions that remain unsettled.
Yeah.
Because I deeply trust in the kindness and goodness of God. Mm. It has taken me a while to get there,
yeah.
right? Because often when you start a journey in seminary or PhD, sometimes things get a little rocky for
yeah.
a while, right?
Mm.
When you let yourself be very honest with what you're encountering in the text. But anyway, so that's been something I've really kind of focused my attention on.
Okay.
And the new work I'm doing is really focused on the chesed of God.
Yeah,
you're asking about that.
Yeah.
But just really looking at this, I think, a very powerfully formative relational,
okay.
theological word.
So in your Downey lectures,
mm-hmm.
I quote, you said, chesed is much more than mercy.
Mm.
Unpack that and how might... Unpack that statement,
yes.
In relation to your work on mm-hmm. chesed. And preachers do so much outside the pulpit. We're much more than preachers,
oh,
the
absolutely.
Performative nature. How might a preacher express mm-hmm. or demonstrate, manifest
mm-hmm.
chesed to a congregation? Or is that possible? Mm-hmm. Is that only something that God does?
Mm-hmm.
I think your work would say otherwise,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So talk to us a little bit about that statement,
yeah.
and more about chesed and how it informs what preachers do outside.
Right. Well, and definitely mercy is key as well. But there's something about this term chesed because, and I'll say the English pronunciation is chesed. It is a unique term in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
It is embedded within who God is, God's very self. Exodus 34, the one time the Lord expands on the Lord's name, that term is twice in there.
Oh.
And so it's something, who God is, and it's also, so it's not only a disposition, but an activity.
Mm-hmm.
And then as being in the Imago Dei,
mm-hmm.
being made in the image of God, you see humanity able to do that to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so most occurrences are God, you know, manifesting that to us, blessing us, acting in that way. But humans can do it for one another as well.
Okay.
And so the thing I love about this, and I think what I get very excited about, is it's connected to, and it's a very difficult term to define, and I will share my definition with you. So many scholars have just said, oh, we just can't, right?
Right.
Often it's translated as loving kindness,
yeah.
covenant love,
uh-huh.
kindness. There's so many ways it's translated in English,
right.
but it's kind of its own thing,
yeah, right?
right? And it's, one of the key things about it is it's relational.
Okay.
And so being in the very sense of who God is, the
right.
heart of God,
mm-hmm.
And that we can do that, to me, the image that my book will bring out is I think of a seed.
Okay.
And how it can flourish, mm-hmm. right? And the thing I love about that is that we can, there's the possibilities are endless,
mm-hmm.
right? If it's rooted in God's self, and then with our unique who we are, right?
Yeah.
There's just so much of how we can manifest that in our life today, whether it's, you know, caring for the poor and the orphan, areas of justice,
yes, yes.
Just things that we are passionate about with God.
Yeah.
And one of the things I suggest in my work is it's not a proposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's best understood through story.
Okay.
And so what I love to do is to chase it through story. So in some ways, for someone in the ministry to think, how can I manifest that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who are you?
Yeah.
Right? How do you find joy in running in your gifting with God and loving well, right? And that's not always easy.
Right.
It's the hard work of the kingdom.
Yes.
And so that's where I see it takes so many different ways and forms. And I even argue for in my book that it's not just leaders doing this.
Okay.
It's those that we might not expect, those on the margins, mm-hmm. Who take risky moments and act with courage in difficult spaces, and it leads to flourishing in life. Okay. I think of the person of Ruth and Orpah. Both of them showed chesed to Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruth, I mean, that's a very, it is a, there is violence humming in the background there, but her activity and actions end up, right, continuing on the line of David.
That's right.
And she's a Moabite, right? So she's someone you wouldn't expect it from.
Right.
And I don't think that term has to be connected for us to see stories of it within the Old Testament either. I think it pops up in a lot of different ways. There are the traditional spaces we see it, but I think it's like, how can we imagine this life with God together?
Right.
And I think it's a place to dream and to think of how can we create flourishing spaces?
Hmm.
And that's where I see chesed. When that is happening, things are good, right? Flourishing.
Right.
Not easy,
mm-hmm.
But definitely looking out for the best and the least of these, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think we need to lean into mm-hmm. and hear more of in these times in which
mm-hmm.
we live.
Yes.
You know, political areas, social, racial, ethnic,
mm-hmm.
Displaying more of that.
Yes.
And I think it's so easy for preachers to gloss over,
mm-hmm.
not dig deep enough
mm-hmm.
to see those stories and what the authors are doing
mm-hmm.
with what they are saying.
Yeah.
So tell us about that work.
Yes.
And I could talk with you for hours,
but
we're almost out of time.
Yeah, no, but that's
If you could tell us the title of your book, when it's out,
mm-hmm.
What would you like for this audience to know about this new work? Because I do think it can be a valuable resource for preachers.
Oh, thank you so much. So the title of the book is Chesed, the Seed of the Biblical Story, New Life for Old Testament Theology. What I hope is that this term can anchor us
mm-hmm.
in the deep character and love of God.
Okay.
As I chase it,
mm-hmm.
the thing that comes up to me, and that was so powerful as I was doing the research, was that even after the trauma of exile, when life was just gone as they knew it, right? Mm-hmm. Temple, all of that. In those spaces, they still prayed to God and said, "You'll remember us because of your chesed. We've broken covenant. We have messed up royally. But because of who you are, we can trust. We will sing a new song," Psalm 40. Mm. And so I think that is what I hope comes out of that, is that no matter what spaces we find ourselves in, even we planted a church and had to close it, so we were in places of rubble,
mm-hmm.
but thinking of that isn't the end of the story, right? In the tomb, we
yeah.
know with Christ, right?
Come on.
New life is coming. And so I think just knowing that it's not about how perfect I am, it's about how perfect God is, right? And so that is what I hope through this book, that it will really anchor us in something deep and stable, right? Especially in places that just feel very unstable and shaky right now in our world today.
And that'll preach.
Yeah, I hope
when is the book out?
So hopefully this fall, we're in the final copy editing stages.
Okay.
It's with Baker Academics.
Good.
But you'll see it if you look for it. But it's probably doesn't have a date quite yet.
Okay,
but
great.
Hoping for this fall.
We'll be looking for it. We'll definitely be promoted.
Wonderful.
That's our time.
Right.
Thank you so much for
thank
sharing.
Thank you for having me.
It was just too short.
Yeah.
But you'll be coming back.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
So we'll appreciate you. Thank you for listening in at another episode of the Cowlake Center podcast. God bless.